show kindness for Jonathan's sake. Now there was a servant of Saul's household named Ziba. They called him to appear before David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba, your servant?" he replied. The king asked, "Is there no one left still of the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness?" Ziba answered the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He's crippled in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He's at the house of Machir, the son of Amiel in Lodibar." So King David had him brought from Lodibar, from the house of Machir, son of Amiel. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed himself to pay him honor. David said, "Mephibosheth, your servant," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David said to him, "for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table." Mephibosheth bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, "I've given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "Your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants to Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table, and he was crippled in both feet.
Good morning, all. Let me add my welcome to Keith's and to the band, and thank you for your participation in that survey. It does help us enormously. Let me pray. Father, as we sit now with your word, would you help us to hear and understand that we might know your grace, your mercy to such an extent that our lives are changed. For we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Mike Baird tells the story of perhaps the first time that he experienced grace. He was studying at Regent College in Vancouver, studying theology to prepare for ordained ministry. And he said there was a guy in the corner of the classroom named Norm, a Canadian with a long beard down to his knees, a colourful hat, colourful clothes, and incredibly painful. At the end of the first semester, Norm approached Mike and invited him to Christmas dinner. Mike Baird says, "When we arrived at Norm's place, a door opened and his wife was there. She gave me a hug, and in that moment, I kind of melted. She said, 'Thank you so much for coming. Norm has been cooking for you for 3 days.' And at that moment, I saw grace. Norm came around the corner. There was his beard covered in flour, and he gave me a big hug, and he said, 'Mike, Merry Christmas. It's so great to have you here.' Norm knew how I felt and how I had treated him. Norm was clearly of the understanding that I wanted to be anywhere but next to Norm. But he returned it with a hug and the most incredible Christmas I had ever had." Grace is like that. It invites you to the table and just leaves a deep impression on you. Another word for grace is kindness, or better yet, loving kindness. And we see that played out in the passage that Andrew just read to us from 2 Samuel 9. David has been king of Israel now for some years. We're told in chapter 8 that he rules his kingdom with justice and righteousness for all his people. But a kingdom is not simply ruled with justice and righteousness. A great kingdom is marked with loving kindness. And so David says at the beginning of the reading, chapter 9, verse 1, "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness?" Is there anyone? Three times in chapter 9, David speaks of his desire to show kindness, loving kindness. And in verse 3, he says, "I want to show the loving kindness of God to someone in Saul's household." This kindness is something that David himself had experienced firsthand at the hand of God. David was a shepherd boy in a despised, smelly occupation. He was the youngest of seven brothers. But God pursued him and drew him all the way until he became king of Israel. David wrote a song. The first verse goes like this. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside still waters. In the third verse he says, he restores my soul. It's shorthand for the shepherd God goes looking for me when in the song we just sang, I go hiding. He goes looking and pursues me and draws me back to himself. He restores my soul. And then in the fifth verse of his song, David now turns his voice to God and sings, and you set a table before me, even in the presence of my enemies, you set a table before me and my cup overflows. In other words, David's singing, the Lord took me from nowhere and then sat me at his table. And now, after all the dust had settled on David's ascendancy to Israel's throne, he wants to show kindness, loving kindness, to any surviving member of Saul's household. He wants to show loving kindness to a descendant of someone who was his bitter enemy. Saul had tried numerous times to kill David. But David says, is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Jonathan and David were the best of friends. Jonathan was second in line to the throne under King Saul. But Jonathan realized that God's hand had been taken off his father and placed on David, and David would be the new king. Jonathan was extraordinarily kind to David, and they had a brilliant friendship. And in 1 Samuel chapter 20, Jonathan cuts a covenant with David and says, show me unfailing kindness, show me loving kindness, like the Lord's loving kindness, as long as I live, so that I may not be killed, and don't ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth. David, I know you're going to be king, and I know that that will lead to bloodshed. I know that all of my family will one day be taken out. But don't forget to show loving kindness to any of my family who survive. David is now securely enthroned. Saul and Jonathan are both dead, and it's time to be like God. It's time for David to honor his covenant with Jonathan. And so he says, is there anyone in Saul's house that I can show loving kindness to? The loving kindness of God. Is there anyone in this house? And someone says, well, there's an ex-slave of Saul's here. His name is Ziba. Maybe he knows. So they call in Ziba. David says to him, is there anyone left in the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness? And Ziba answers the king, there is still a son of Jonathan. There is a son of Jonathan. He is lame in both feet. In other words, King David, he's no threat to you, the warrior king. He is a descendant of Saul, that is true, but the loyalists to Saul are not likely to gather around a lame man to overthrow you. He is a safe one, but there is one. And David says, well, where is he? He is in Lodabar. The name Lodabar is loaded. It means a place of no pasture, a place of no promise. It's miles from nowhere. It's the end of a long road. It's a place with no future. This is where this son lives. This son's desperate existence is heightened by a number of word plays that follow in the passage here. In verse 4, we're told he is at the house of Machiah, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar. He's in the house of Machiah, the house. The word house can also be translated prison. He is in the house of Machiah, Machir means sold. He is in the house of Machir, son of Amiel. Amiel can be translated darkness. Here is this son of Jonathan, this young man, this lame man, whose both feet are useless to him, living in a prison of darkness in a place called No Future. And to add insult to injury, this young man's name had been changed. The name he was given at birth was Miriam Baal. It was a strong name, an honourable name. It meant slayer of idols. His name is now Mephibosheth, which means shameful one. But at least Mephibosheth is living in Lodabar, a million miles away from the king, his enemy, who is likely to take his life if ever he's revealed. But David won't leave him in Lodabar. He wants to show the loving kindness of the Lord his God to Mephibosheth. And so the king has Mephibosheth brought from Lodabar, from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel. What must it have been like for Mephibosheth on that day, the day when the king's soldiers turned up in a place of no future? Did his heart sink? Did his throat dry up? Did his chest get tightened? Did he fear that now he really did have no future because the king had found him and the king was about to kill him? So he's brought all the way from Lodabar to the palace of the king. We read in verse 6, when Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honour. Mephibosheth must have been on edge. We're not really sure, but he must have been on edge. But listen again to verse 6. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David. He didn't come to King David. He came to David. This verse drips with tenderness. And time must have stood still for Mephibosheth as he kneels before David and he waits. And he hears his name. He doesn't hear Mephibosheth. He hears Mephibosheth. I am your servant. That's all Mephibosheth could think to say. Clearly he's fearful, so David says to him in verse 7, don't be afraid, for I surely will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. And what kindness it was. I will restore to you, Mephibosheth, all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul. I give it all back to you. And what's more, you will always eat at my table. You will always eat at my table. Mephibosheth is incredulous and he says in verse 8, what is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me? David ignores those words because Mephibosheth is not a dead dog in David's eyes. Mephibosheth is the very object of loving kindness. And so the king summons Ziba, Saul's servant, and says to him, I have given your master's grandson Mephibosheth everything that belonged to Saul and his family, and you and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for, and Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table. And at the end of chapter 9, we read, Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. Mephibosheth no longer lives in Lodabar. He lives in Jerusalem, the city of God, the city of peace. He no longer lives without a future. He eats at the king's table. He no longer lives with shame. He is the adopted son of the king. Loving kindness always finds a way to bring people to the table. You look at the last sentence in 2 Samuel chapter 9. And he was lame in both feet. Mephibosheth wasn't born that way. When he was 5 years old, news came from the battlefront that both of his grandfather, King Saul, and his father, Jonathan, had been killed in battle. And so we read the report that follows. His nurse picked him up and fled, but as she hurried to leave, he fell and he became lame. Maybe his back was broken. Maybe both feet or both legs were so badly broken that he would never walk again. In any case, he was unable to walk without assistance, and we have no idea how he hobbled around. In an instant, that boy's whole world went pear-shaped. No longer a prince, no longer whole and well, he was lame. In one battle, David's enemies boasted that even the blind and the lame could repel David. David took it that his enemies were speaking of themselves, and he said that they were blind and they were lame. And so on the day of that battle, David said, anyone who conquers the Jebusites will have to use the water shaft to reach those lame and blind who are David's enemies. And then there's this interesting sentence. That is why they say, the blind and lame will not enter the palace. But now, at David's table, is a man who was once considered David's enemy, and he was lame. Loving kindness will always find ways to bring even the lame enemies to the table. Loving kindness always finds a way to have people reconciled and restored. Now, whether inspired by David's loving kindness or simply the loving kindness of God, years later, when both David and Mephibosheth had rested with their fathers, the prophets began to say, on the day that God walks with men and women, the desert and the parched land will be glad, the wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like a rose, it will burst into bloom, it will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. Then the lame will leap for joy. And when God, the King of Kings, walks with men and women, the lame will not simply walk, they leap for joy. And we're told they will enter Zion with singing, and everlasting joy will crown their heads, and gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. In other words, the lame will find a seat at the King of Kings' table. A few centuries after that prophecy was uttered, people held their breath. Sometimes the rabbi would stretch out his hand and touch a lame man. At other times he would speak tenderly to a lame man. And each time the lame would walk. When the rabbi was asked if he was the Messiah, if he was the King of Kings, the one promised, he essentially said, what do you see? You see the lame walk. Yes, I am the one. And I have come to clear a path so that any who live in Lodabar, any who fear that life has no promise, I come to bring them to my table. And that loving kindness took Jesus all the way to the cross, because loving kindness travels to the most unlikely places to restore souls. Jesus reaches out not just simply to the physically lame, but all who are made lame by sin, because he simply wants us all to find a seat at his table. In a thinly veiled parable about his kingdom, Jesus told a story about a master who was having a banquet, and he wanted the banquet hall filled, and the banquet hall wasn't quite filled, and so the master sends his servant out, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the cripple, the blind, and the lame. For my table must be filled, he said. And the thing that sparked that parable off was Jesus was at a dinner party, and he said to his host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends or your brothers or your sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be rewarded. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the cripple, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. David got that way before his greatest son Jesus put it on display. He had a lame man sitting at his table. Mephibosheth got it. In the last report we have about Mephibosheth, Ziba has been quite treacherous to Mephibosheth. Ziba managed to defraud Mephibosheth of all the property that King David had given him, and he did it in a cowardly way. He stole the lame man's donkey that the lame man was going to use to greet his king. When Mephibosheth finally got to be with his king, Mephibosheth says, "My lord the king, since I, your servant, am lame, I said, I will have a donkey saddled and will ride on it so that I can go with the king. But Ziba, my servant, betrayed me, and he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. My lord the king is like an angel of God, so whatever pleases you, you do." And he says a few more things. And the king wants to give half the land back to Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth says, "I don't want it. You give it all to Ziba. Give it all to him. I just simply want to be at your table." Now, no one would have thought anything less of Mephibosheth if he'd taken half the land back or even called for justice and retribution because Ziba had been so treacherous and so cowardly. No one would have thought anything about it. But Mephibosheth, shaped by his experience of the Lord's loving kindness at the hand of David, lives like his king and shows loving kindness to Ziba, his enemy, saying, "Let him take everything now that my lord the king is home safely." That is simply how anyone lives and acts who has met the King of loving kindness.